Wisconsin, I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to be talking about the RNC platform? Question mark? I'm calling it the RNC platitudes in all caps with lots of exclamation points. It's weird, y'all. I mean, it's really weird. Super happy to be joined this half hour by my co-host, good friend of the show, and friend of all of you, Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics. Navy veteran, small business owner, and former congressional candidate. Welcome back, Tom.
Good to be back. I was just thinking how much the world has changed in just 2 weeks. It is astounding how much different things are today than the last time we talked.
Yes, indeed. And how different the Republican Party platitudes have become. 8 years ago, when Trump first went, there was like 60 pages of platform, you know, with like policy specifics. Now it's 16, from 60 to 16 and zero detail. I'm not calling it a platform anymore. I'm calling it the Republican Party platitudes. But before we get to that, Tom, we spent the last half hour talking about the NATO summit that's going on in Washington, D.C. It's the 75th anniversary of what arguably is the world's most effective and most powerful military alliance. It puts me beside myself in a way of speaking that a party that used to be national defense hawks, right? Very aggressive in terms of our military alliances and the role of the United States in the world, now seems to have abandoned all principle and simply is floundering about to articulate why Donald Trump is an appropriate man for the Oval Office when he brought NATO to the brink of collapse in his first term. They seem to sidestep all of that. Also, a texter, Matt from Richland Center, made this incredibly important point. Correct me if I'm wrong, Maggie, but if Trump pulls out of NATO and allows Putin to invade Poland and other Baltic states, won't that make energy prices increase even more? Yes, absolutely. Inflation did not hit its peak of 9% until June of 2021. That was, let's do the math together. Russia invaded Ukraine in February. So February to March, April, May, June. Yeah, that's a little bit over a quarter, which is what most economists, bingo, bango, say inflation lags the global economic factors, a quarter plus. It's exactly what economists would have predicted would have happened. We had a spike in oil and gas prices, which infected the entire global supply chain, and we saw inflation ratchet way, way up. Of course, Matt from Richland Center, Trump destabilizing NATO and the whole Western alliance will drive prices through the roof. What are your reflections, especially as a veteran, Tom, in this moment as NATO convenes in Washington, D.C., thinking about potentially a second Trump presidential term?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, though. The America First idea is basically founded on that we need to take care of our own. And the reason we can't take care of our own is because we're taking care of everyone else. But, you know, I think the Republicans were definitely against communism. But I'm not sure Republicans today are against authoritarianism. And I think that's the big difference that we're seeing today is there's not this overriding fundamental belief like we need to protect democracy. It's maybe we need to move a little bit closer toward Putin and some of the other like Hungary and Turkey and some of the other countries where this whole idea of moving away from a democracy seems to appeal to a whole bunch of people. But I would say, Maggie, you know, one of the things I caught in your previous hour is you said this could be one of the most important issues that Trump dismantles NATO. I think the one that, you know, to use a pun, trumps that is pulling out of all the climate action that's happening today. You know, while NATO is a fundamental issue that we'll need to solve, climate is even a bigger issue. And if you actually read, you know, Project 2025, you'll see that everything that's going to happen when it comes to changing, you know, our fundamentals about how we're attacking climate change is going to get dismantled. And that to me is, it's not only just a threat to democracy, it's a threat to, you know, it leads us down the path to extinction. So those are the thoughts that I had. And then trying to unpack, you know, is there a platform? I think one of the things I thought about was in 2020, if I remember correctly, there was no platform. So they went from 60 Correct. To zero to 16. So this is a huge improvement that they decided to actually do a platform. But I agree with you, because if you can solve everything, you don't want to put anything down in writing to say what you're actually going to do, because then people can hold you accountable to that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, the party of bootstraps is about the most unaccountable political party that we've seen in modern American political history. Like, there's no fidelity and accountability to fundamental or first principles. Plus, there are no right. There are no values. Yep. I want to give one of our callers a shot at it, since we've been talking about NATO. Mark from Prairie du Sac, did you have a comment on the NATO topic, sir?
Yeah, we have to maintain NATO, because that's the only thing that we use to, you know, contain the Soviet Union and now the Russian Federation or whatever the hell they're dreaming. They have imperial dreams. They once again have imperial dreams. Whether Vladimir Putin sees himself as Peter the Great, who actually, you know, had some more Western outlook, wanted to become more European, but Vladimir Putin is solidly, you know, Russian. And he wants to maintain, you know, reestablish an imperial Russia, which includes, you know, gobbling up, you know, what he can of Ukraine, and probably gobbling up the Baltics, and, you know, a chunk of Poland, and probably a chunk of Finland, and whatever else he can take. And Donald Trump is perfectly happy just to hand it over to him on a silver platter. And for Republicans not to acknowledge this, for Mitch McConnell to go out there and talk, you know, given this homily and praise of NATO at this point in time is just kind of disgusting to me, because he's not standing up and saying Donald Trump was wrong. He's, you know, he'll mealy-mouthy, you know, go to Donald Trump and kiss his ass during the convention, and Trump will, you know, that who knows what we'll see coming from the Republican Party out at the in any form of the platform there, you know, concerning NATO at all, concerning, you know, a major threat to the world, which is climate change, which they don't want to admit. I mean, that what I find just galling is these Republicans that are running in for local offices here in Wisconsin say, oh, we love the Constitution. And I go, you know, I can't use that non-FCC complaint right now, but they're just full of crap, because they simply do not believe in the Constitution anymore. I mean,
that's where we're at, Mark. Just since we're on the topic of NATO, I have printed and have read the Republican Party platform. The word NATO, or the acronym NATO, doesn't appear anywhere. There's a section called, it's on page 16, strengthen alliances. Republicans will strengthen alliances by ensuring that our allies meet their obligations to invest in our common defense by restoring peace to Europe. We will stand with Israel and seek peace in the Middle East. We will rebuild our alliance network in the region. Likewise, we will champion strong, sovereign, and independent nations in the Indo-Pacific, thriving in peace and commerce with others. I have to be honest with you. That is garbage. I mean, it says nothing. You don't even mention NATO. And by the way, Trump was the one that said, oh, I'm going to get everybody to pay their share. Nope, you didn't do that. Joe Biden did that to meet the agreement to at least contribute 2% of a nation's GDP, went from, I think, two nations, you heard it in the Biden comments played early on the show today, to something like 23 of the 38 nations. That pledge was made in 2006. Joe Biden did that, not Donald Trump. The idea that NATO and the word Ukraine and Russia, like, this doesn't appear in the Republican Party platform? Is that as indefensible as I think it is?
Yes. You know, but I think, Maggie, the bigger picture here is that the Republican Party really isn't interested in a platform. They want to give enough leeway for Trump to be able to maneuver. But you mentioned Mitch McConnell, our caller mentioned Mitch McConnell. you know, there's still a whole bunch of Republicans that think that they'll be able to have some kind of, they'll wield some kind of power and be able to move within whatever Trump leaves as a vacuum to make sure things are handled. But, you know, if you read Project 2025, that's not what's going to be happening. And I don't know if they're, I don't know if they're just blinded to what the reality looks like, but it just seems, it seems to be like it's a capitulation and that those people will be leaving anyways. Like Mitch McConnell has one foot out the door.
Well, yeah, he I think McConnell has publicly said he's not going to be running for re-election. It's a complete and total failure of leadership. And to your point, Tom, that where we began the hour, talking about like sort of the single issue voter, I meant to posit if your issue is national security and right. the importance of democracy, this the, Trump and NATO and Ukraine and Putin and Erdogan and Orban, that decides the issue, right? If your issue is climate, the word climate doesn't appear anywhere, no. zero times in the Republican platform. I mean, just conceive of that. Zero times.
Right. You saw what Hurricane Beryl did, you know, just this yeah. last weekend. And you just have to imagine how much worse it's going to get. And here we are not taking the action that we need to take because we're thinking of electing somebody who doesn't even believe that it's happening.
Or he does, but it doesn't suit his political interests, right? And so he's going to lie about it every day. The great question that comes to me frequently when I read this platform is, they know this is all baloney, right? And I know that they do, but it's this sort of truism where if you repeat the lie or you repeat the garbage frequently enough and loud enough, people will believe it. Tom, we got just a couple moments, seconds really, give a thought and then we're gonna take a couple messages.
Instead of it being about policy, it's about popularity. And that's where our horse races have ended up. And I think people need to remember that a vote for Biden is a vote for democracy, not just Joe Biden.
That's Tom Paulswitz, my special guest and co-host, one of the most reasonable men in politics, Navy veteran, small business owner, and former congressional candidate. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You got a question or comment? We're talking RNC platform this hour. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Russia, if you're listening, all I want to do is be able to watch.
Listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My special co-host this for however long he chooses to grace us with his presence is Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics. Welcome back, Tom. Thank you so much for being here. We're talking about the RNC platitudes. That's what I'm calling it, the platitude document. It is not a policy platform by any stretch. Again, this is not yet the formal adopted document. It is the draft one. They will formally adopt it next week during the Republican National Convention. Interesting note about that, Tom. I find this to be incredibly revealing. It has been the case for a long time. It wasn't in 2020 because there was no platform.
Was none, correct.
But yep. The Republican Party... for decades before, when they would have their committee meetings or their meetings about the platform, they were televised, they were public. Hey, Tom, do you want to take a guess about whether or not those meetings are going to be public this year?
I can tell you that they won't be. Yeah. And I think the other amazing thing about the document itself is the idea that they couldn't even send it through some kind of punctuation check. It's like maybe it'll get cleaned up before it's presented, but I don't think so. I mean, it was written by somebody, probably Donald Trump. Somebody was just like dictating, and that's what they put down on paper. So
what it is 16 pages of tweets. I mean, legitimately, folks, if you haven't seen it, go ahead and get it, read it. It is 16 pages of tweets, like the random punctuation, the use of all caps, like complete overkill with exclamation points. It is it's just, hey, these punchy lines that sound nice, but mean nothing, that you're completely incapable of holding anyone accountable. And I think sort of watching what's happening, this is really cynical politics, right? I think you said, Tom, when you don't say anything specific, no one can ever hold you accountable. There's that operating. And there's also this, you say some generic words that sort of appeal to the simplified populism, and it allows people to project whatever they feel about a topic onto the speaker or onto the party or onto the ticket, as it were here.
Yes.
And that to me, I mean, I know that it feels good, but, you know, again, kindergarten rules, playground rules, like you try to get to a place where we're not being jerked around by whatever just feels good. Like, I thought that was kind of the hallmark of adulthood, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, just the title itself, A Return to Common Sense, right? That's a great phrase to leave open the interpretation of what common sense really is. And Maggie, I know you and I have talked about this, right? Common sense isn't common because not everyone has had the same experience that you've had. So therefore, they don't exactly know what you know. But it's a great phrase to use when you want people to think, well, everybody should just know that, or that's already obviously the right thing to do, but it's not. And I think the other thing that struck me about just the overall document is by not saying, like you had said before, by not saying much, there's nothing to hold people accountable to, and it defaults back. And this is what I was saying before we took the break, is it's now a popularity decision versus a policy decision. And politics, I think, has become that. And I think as Democrats, the Democrats have fallen into the same trap by looking at Joe Biden and wondering if he's going to be popular enough, instead of really focusing and touting on all the benefits and basically everything the administration has been able to do in the last 4 years. Because to me, it doesn't really matter who's at the top of the ticket. It's you're voting for. Do you want these policies?
The administration and the policies. That's what we should be doing.
Yes,
I mean, exactly. My immediate response minutes after the debate ended, going to be now nearly 2 weeks ago tomorrow, was, listen, are you voting because of delivery and style and like showmanship, or are you voting for content? It's a different version of the argument that you're making here. There's no question Joe Biden has had, by many accounts, the most successful presidency for the middle class and working people in this country in modern American history. Right. And yet, here we are talking about a 16-page set of policy platitudes that have absolutely no specifics, that mean basically nothing. And it includes this. I'm going to get to the pander about abortion in just a second. I want to give one of our regular listeners and texters a shot at it. Hi, Cam from Appleton. What do you have to say hello to Tom? And what do you have to say this afternoon?
Hello, Tom. Hello, Maggie.
Hello.
I would like to point out that the Supreme Court brief that Trump and his team gave was 67 pages. And a point to make that's inside of it that is important for people to underline when it comes to why might he like Putin, it's because Trump is very good at telling on himself. A denial of criminal immunity would incapacitate every future president with de facto blackmail and extortion while in office and condemn him to years of post-office trauma at the hands of political opponents. That's just a short bit. But yeah, he just tells on himself. He has something, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's always been the rumor mill. Again, no evidence. We don't know this. But certainly asking some uncomfortable questions about, well, why does Donald Trump steal our super secret spy documents and keep them after he's been asked for a year to give them back and then receives a couple of subpoenas and his lawyers tell him you have to give these back, you can't keep these, and then forces the FBI to raid his house and they find the super secret spy documents that they've been asking for. And then he gets two of the guys that work for him who just did what they were told in criminal trouble because they moved the super secret spy documents to hide them from the FBI at Donald Trump's direction. We're all standing around going, well, no problem. I'm sure he'll do the right thing when it comes to NATO and Putin. I mean, give me a break. Cam, thanks so much for calling and listening. Always good to hear from you and see you on our text lines. I have to talk about abortion. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I am going to read to you from the RNC platitude, the Republican platitude document, 16 pages, 0 pages in 2020, but 60 pages in 2016. I'm going to read you what they've said about abortion.
Yep.
And we're going to fact check it about what they've actually said out loud and what they said back in 2016 about abortion. Right. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Tom Paulsiewicz. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. Your farm update is next.
Hell does that mean?
I'm sorry, but all questions must be submitted in writing.
This long-distance dedication goes out to the RNC.
I might take you for who you are, but I won't take the Republican Party's platitudes posing as a political platform. No, thank you. No, not at all. My special guest this hour, co-host Tom Paulsiewicz, one of the most reasonable men in politics. We're talking about the RNC platitudes posing as a policy platform. It's a bunch of poppycock. I don't know if I can think of other P words, but I'm sure they'll come to me in a bit. I promise before.
More, yeah.
Yeah, many, many more. Probably some that aren't FCC compliant as well. I promise to talk about the section of the platform on abortion because it is balderdash. It is a lie. It is a lie being told now by Donald Trump. We know it's a lie because he's said the opposite and said all kinds of things in the past. He's taken credit for the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Donald Trump is the reason that women have fewer rights today than they did before he was elected. Period. Full stop. And whether you look at the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 or simply the prior policy platforms from the Republican Party, the lie is obvious. And that is that the Republican Party and Donald Trump, whether he lies about it or not, stands for and supports a national abortion ban. That's thing one. And that thing two that they support and stand behind is that at the moment of conception, that blastocyst, that mass of cells, is a person deserving of full protection of rights as if it was a fully formed person just like the mother.
Yes.
Which is insane because the blastocyst can't exist outside of the mother. So it's not a fully formed person and whatever. I'm digressing. Let me read what they actually put in the Republican Party platitudes, which they will formally adopt on Monday. Uh, Americans must be allowed to follow and his or her deeply held beliefs. To protect religious liberties, Republicans support a new federal task force fighting anti-Christian bias that will investigate all forms of illegal discrimination. That's sort of their lead up to this. 68% of Americans identify in some way as Christian. Like, there's no anti-Christian bias. Christians are like literally 7 in 10 of us. Wow.
Right.
Okay. I'll continue on. We proudly stand for families and life. We believe that the 14th Amendment of the Constitution guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process. I'm just going to pause there.
Yes.
This is what I'm talking about. When they say that in this, and it's they get to the abortion question, when they say that, what they're saying is that life begins at conception and a blastocyst is entitled to 14th Amendment protections. That's what that means. That means that you need a national abortion ban. That means no more IVF. That means no more fertility treatments. That means locking women and doctors up for being murderers. That's what that means. But then they say this in the very, let me just quick finish and then I want to get your thoughts now. It's one sentence. That was just the first part. So they've just made the statement that at the moment of fertilization, you have a person and we're going to lock women and doctors up. There will be no more IVF and we advocate for a national abortion ban. You know that they're liar, liar, pants on fire, because the next thing they say is this, which blows the mind here. And that the states are therefore free to pass laws protecting those rights. What?
Yes.
No, 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 no. If a blastocyst is entitled to 14th Amendment protections under the federal constitution, then you don't get to leave it to the states. Any legal scholar will tell you that like that doesn't work together as concept. So in the very sentence where they address this, they are lying to you. It is so deeply offensive. By the way, the word abortion appeared 35 times in the 2016 Republican Party platform.
Right.
It only appears once in this statement.
Yes.
Let me just continue. After 51 years, because of us, that power has been given to the states. That's Donald Trump taking credit for the overturn of Roe v. Wade.
Yes.
We will oppose late-term abortion. Just by the way, vast majority of Democrats also oppose late-term abortion.
And abortion after birth, as he talked about in the debate, right? Yes.
This is like...
Yes.
Help us here, Tom. I mean, is it truly as bad as I think it is? Like, it's just riddled with lies and misdirection.
I think it's worse. The reason they're bringing up the 14th Amendment, because you can now expect a Supreme Court ruling to say that at conception, that is a person and therefore completely protected by the 14th Amendment. What I'm really curious to see is how do you then decide which person
counts more
is protected by the 14th Amendment? Mm-hmm. And I think we both know that it's not going to be the woman.
I wonder why. Let's just pause.
You know, it's shocking, isn't it? But this to me tells you that this is the game plan that they have. So nod and wink, because I don't know if you saw, but there was a little bit of a kerfuffle after adopting this from the
right
groups.
I was going to get to that.
Who suddenly went silent. And I think they had to have it explained to them, like, hey, just be patient. Just
don't
wait.
Freak out.
Right.
We're getting
here's
there.
What's going to happen. We don't need Congress. We've got the Supreme Court.
And the fact that they're trying to pass this off and change the language to lie and trick, lying Donald Trump, the lying RNC, the lying Republican Party. Let me just refresh everyone's recollection. In 2016, the platform, again, used the word abortion 35 times. They had extensive and specific details about what the Republican Party would do to limit abortions, including, of course, supporting a federal ban on abortion after 20 weeks. And that 2016 platform stated explicitly that, quote, the unborn child has a fundamental right to life which cannot be infringed. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the exact equivalent of that statement. It just uses different words. This is the statement from 2016. The unborn child has a fundamental right to life which cannot be infringed, end quote. The equivalent in this policy platform is this statement, quote, we believe that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process, end quote. That sentence appears in the paragraph addressing abortion. They mean exactly the same thing. Yeah. And Tom is absolutely right. There was this sort of day-long freakout by pro-life movements, including a statement from Marjorie Danis Feltzer, the president of the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America organization, who said she's concerned about changes to the platform. Quote, it is important that the GOP reaffirmed its commitment to protect the unborn life today through the 14th Amendment, she said in a statement. She just told you that those statements are equivalents. But right. She went on to say, under this amendment, it is Congress that enacts and enforces its protections. The Republican Party remains strongly pro-life at the national level.
Yes.
So she wasn't the freaking out one, by the way. She was the one saying, yep, it says exactly what we want it to say. This to me is so fundamentally disingenuous. It is so dangerous. This is the Republican Party and a presidential candidate lying to the American people about a fundamental freedom.
Yep.
And if they are willing to lie about this, what else are they lying about?
Yeah. And I would say that they're lying in the context of deciding that it's not abortion, but they're actually telling you exactly how they're going to implement an abortion ban. So they're being completely upfront about the mechanism they're going to use. It's just interesting for them to say this when there is no current case in front of the Supreme Court to decide this. So lo and behold, guess what we're going to be, but also, and you know this, Maggie, right? The Supreme Court in 2016 is not the Supreme Court we have today. So
no, because of Donald Trump. Right. Brian, if you can play the short Chris Matthews sound where Donald Trump says women should be punished if they get an abortion, we'd love to have it. If you've got it, let me know. We'll give him a second.
Just
I'm sure Brian will. Yeah, here we go.
He's digging it out. Nice.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 cents, 10 years.
I don't know.
And there you have it, folks. Believe what the man says. Believe. Yeah. The equivalency that's being drawn explicitly, do not let them fool you. They're coming for your IVF. They're coming for your fertility treatments. They're coming for your mifepristone. That will also go away, which is used by many women facing life-threatening pregnancies so that they don't have to actually become septic and get airlifted from Texas to a place that actually still has abortion. What's going to happen to women when this Supreme Court of right-wing, nationalistic, evangelical Christians decides that, yep, a national abortion ban is appropriate because as soon as conception occurs, we have a life that's entitled to 14th Amendment protections, and women start dying in emergency rooms. Like, right. What then? It's not like the Supreme Court's going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, we just thought it was going to be 1,000 women dying and that number was enough, but it's actually 10. Like, how many women dying in ERs and from sepsis and all of the things that can go wrong with it? How many is going to be too many? And by that time, it will be too late. This court's not going to one day wake up and be like, oh, we got it wrong. Here's another opinion.
Yeah, but Maggie, this isn't about the Supreme Court anymore. This is about the religious right basically saying it's God's will. And we should not be involved in God's will. And it's dumbfounding because we've already made this decision about science versus religion in that, we have the tools to be able to do what we need to do in order to keep ourselves fit and healthy. And to take part of that away because you believe from a religious standpoint, this is the way it should be, is fundamentally wrong. It's taking it right away, but they're couching it in the element of providing rights. I mean, if you look at it from the outside, it's a brilliant tactic if you're talking to the completely uninformed, right? And to me, that's the point of this show, is to make sure people are informed and understand that this is exactly what you're talking about. Now, I do want to bring up one more thing, because it was tucked into the platform. It was tucked into the platform a little bit lower. It said basically, as part of the military, that the military would work hard to get rid of the woke left-wing Democrats within the military. And when you think about that statement combined with using the 14th Amendment when it comes to abortion, it starts to create a picture of the mechanisms that the Trump administration is willing to use to decide for you our way of life.
Well, in the idea that we're going to litmus test on political viewpoints, members of the military and anyone who wants to serve in government is so fundamentally screwed up.
Yes.
When
you think about the military, if it goes down to the military level, who is going to go against illegal orders?
No one.
It comes to, if you believe that it's the right thing to do. So that to me was very disturbing when I read it.
I'll talk more about this article yesterday in case you think Tom and I might be exaggerating. No, because Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, said yesterday at the National Conservatism Conference that don't worry, I am a Christian nationalist. America, as we know it, cannot survive without biblical Christianity. Some will say now that I'm calling America a Christian nation, and so I am. And some will say that I'm advocating Christian nationalism. And so I do. That from Senator Josh Hawley. Thanks so much, Tom Paulsiewicz. He'll be back in 2 weeks to join us here again on the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with some final thoughts after these messages.
Well, now, I'm no lawyer, but I do believe that's a violation of my rights.
Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I told everybody I was going to do Project 2025 tomorrow, and I just can't. I think my head is going to explode if I try to do it tomorrow. Tomorrow, I will talk about the VP Olympics. I'm going to cover today's Biden's top 100, which we're not going to have time to get to yet. So tomorrow we will do the VP Olympics, why Donald Trump has waited so long to make an announcement. When do we think he's going to announce? We might even do a little over and under. I'm going to give away a very special prize package. If you don't have weekend plans, listen to tomorrow, especially if you are a Badger Marquette Golden Eagle fan. Very special giveaway tomorrow. We will talk about the VP Olympics. We'll have day 27 and 28 on Joe Biden's top 100. We are talking about infrastructure this week. I will save Project 2025 for after the convention. I'm sure it will come up, but I'm saving it also in part because I want to draw some compare and contrast between the adopted Republican Party platform and what is in Project 2025, because there's this, Donald Trump is in Project 2025. Yes, he is. And they actually, they can't help themselves. When you write like a third grader in all caps and, in simple phrases and things, sometimes you just give yourself away. Donald Trump is Project 2025. There can simply be no debating that fact. So we're at the last segment of the day again. A gorgeous day out there. Hope you all are enjoying. Hope it is as beautiful where you are as where I am. But I promised you that I would share what kind of this clearer sense of why I felt really a sense of profound sadness. It has been, and as Tom alluded to, it has been a profoundly challenging couple of weeks. And next week, we're going to just hear an absolute avalanche, an unrelenting spewing of lies. And when it's not lies, what it will be is hate. And that's what came to me last night. Well, I know we talk about it, and I talk about racism and misogyny and homophobia and xenophobia. But what I wanted to talk about was like why I felt so sad. And I was trying to figure out like why I had this profound, overwhelming sadness. And it occurred to me that what I was experiencing wasn't just sadness, that it was a particular type of sadness. And the type of sadness that I at least am feeling is mourning. It is a profound, profound and deep sense of loss. And people have talked about, you know, the degradation of politics, that we've lost decency. But my sense of loss is different from that. I make a distinction here. The mourning that I'm having, what I think we've lost, and especially in this state, I've always been so incredibly proud to be a Wisconsinite and a Milwaukeean. One of the things that made me so incredibly proud is that there was this feeling, this sensibility that I grew up with, that in Wisconsin, we care about one another and that we want not just better for me and my family, but that we truly had a very caring, a genuine concern for our neighbors, that we grew up in communities that were connected, whether it was rural or urban, that people were, again, proud of where they were from. We were proud of our neighborhoods. And we were proud because we had a sense of community, of connectedness, of shared responsibility. Frankly, a sense of gentleness, of tenderness to one another. And when I look around today, especially at the MAGA movement, there is no tenderness. There is no gentleness. Those words sound almost silly coming out of my mouth. What happened to all of that? That is the profound mourning, the sadness that I'm experiencing. I don't ever remember a time in my life when anybody I knew wore a t-shirt that said F the president by name, that engaged in expletives, that proudly proclaimed that they don't care about certain people, or the it's language of violence. I mean, these t-shirts that I see people wearing, the aggressiveness that I feel from the right, if I dare to disagree. And I remember a time when my family could disagree about things and it didn't devolve into you're a terrible person and F you. I feel an incredible deep sense of loss. The death of that tenderness, of that gentleness towards one another, even people we don't understand, which has always been challenging for us. We're human beings. I don't know about you, but the golden rule that I remember most from growing up was to love thy neighbor as thyself. Where did that go?
It's a whole lot of people that hate themselves, Maggie.
If we're measuring it by the hate shown others, it would certainly seem to be the case. So I mourn for us together, for that lost sense of community, for the gentleness that we used to show one another. Can Can we return to the kindness among strangers, even when we don't know one another? I think we can return to a common cause, to that tenderness and gentleness. Because if we continue in this way, we will break not just each other, but we will break our community and ourselves and this nation. I'll be back tomorrow. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. It's always better, and it is essential that we stand together. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was sad for America. I was sad for